Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is that darling of the silver screen, Kyle JCRB Krause.
Hey, paisanos! It's the Super Bumblecast Super Show! Or whatever this is called. What is this called, Ian?
It's the Bumblecast, but now you have me seriously considering doing a very bad Mario Brothers Super Show styled rap to some remix of the Bumblecast theme. And I hate you for putting that in my head.
We need a remix of the Bumblecast theme. So somebody get on that.
If somebody does a Mario Super Brothers Super Show styled remix, I will put all of my fat, hairy whiteness into a very bad rap. I promise this to you.
Promise or threaten. You must channel your Captain Lou Albano to the fullest.
How have you been, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. We're doing pretty good today, actually, because we are doing our first live Patreon recording session.
Woohoo!
So patrons can hear us now. It's scary. I'm scared, Ian. Are you scared?
No, I was made to perform on the stage, which is my bedroom to a sleeping cat at the moment. But yeah, it's kind of like a stage. It's hypothetical, sort of.
And meanwhile, I'm sitting in my computer in the second room with another computer in it, so I'm performing to another
computer.
Look
at you being all fancy and having multiple rooms.
Oh, yeah, it's weird. I don't understand this whole multiple room thing sometimes.
Get lost in your own desk chair, do you?
We used to have like only one other room. We had like two rooms. You remember that, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
We had like two rooms. And now we have more than two rooms. So it's very strange. We have more than two bathrooms even. That's very awkward. Actually, we only have two bathrooms. Sorry, we have more than one bathroom. That's what I meant to say. So if that's interesting to you, then become a patron at patreon.com/bumblecast, where you'll get to hear all the exciting chatter that we had before we started recording today, in which case we sat here and mainly tried to figure out technical problems. And then I don't know what else did we talk about, Ian? What did we do?
You'd have to be a patron to find out. And if you missed on the live recording, we will have the raw audio for you over on patreon.com/bumblecast. So you don't miss out on all the fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty silly what happened before we started the show today. So that's what you'll miss out on if you're not a patron. So patreon.com/bumblecast. We're going to push that. We're going to get on our knees and beg. Or, okay, maybe we're not going to do that, but we're at least
going to do
a show.
All right, so next up is the Bumble Raffle, and surprise, this is the last Bumble Raffle. We've done the show for how long now? The raffle.
I think it's started like in the, maybe the 30s or the 20s. It's been a long time. We've been doing it for a long time.
Yep, and it was mostly to incentivize non-patrons to get involved a little bit, but also reward patrons for being patrons. And what it ended up being was just a revolving door of us handing out stuff to the same people over and over and over again. And that's disheartening to people just listening casually. It gets boring for the patrons. So this is the last one. We're going to wrap it up. We're going to put it to bed. Thank you to everyone who entered, both patrons, because, you know, that was automatic, and everyone else, because you took a chance, and some of you won. You actually did. But we're not going to leave you empty-handed. Kyle, we're going to end the Bumble Raffle with a bang. And how are we going to do that?
This episode's Bumble Raffle winners are all of you. Twice!
Every single patron!
Every patron, twice. You get two, not one, two Steam keys for random games that I have. I have tons of Steam keys, and they're pretty good games, too. Not gonna lie. I've set aside some good ones for you guys. So all patrons will get two Steam keys to do as they please. Do with as they please. Play the games, enjoy them. Do whatever you want with them. Give them to friends. Share them out there. It's all good. So
plus, anyone who has written in between the time of this recording and when it actually goes live, you won as well. Everyone who is in the Bumble Raffle yep. wins this time.
For this episode. So, congratulations, everybody. You have won the Bumble Raffle. And Yay! You have won the Bumble Cast, because you're listening to it right now. All right. So, with the Bumble Raffle wrapped up, I think it's time to move on to our main topic, Ian.
Yes, it is. And today we're going to be talking about our top three big movie moments. Those moments where you will sit down and watch the entire film just for that one glorious nugget. I mean, yeah, you can look it up, you know, somewhere on YouTube by itself, but that doesn't quite get the same feel to it, you know? Yeah. You got to build up to it. You got to enjoy the ride afterwards. But that one moment that makes you go, God, I want to watch that whole film again. Not really the whole film. But I want to see that one moment. I need it again. I need it, Kyle. What's number one on your list?
I cheated, but we'll get to first that. On your list, we'll get to say. We'll get to that eventually. First on my list, I had to go with something from the MCU. You know, I had to do it. And I was sitting there thinking, like, what's a good moment? What's a real good moment? What's a real good movie that builds up to an excellent moment? And there's lots of really good moments in the MCU. That is not a lie. But I cannot get over the shrinking car chase from Ant-Man and the Wasp.
That was fun.
There's just something about that. That whole movie, actually, and just the way it all comes together and builds up to that moment. Sure, it's not like the final moment of the movie. It's not the final scenes. It's not the final battle or anything like that. It's not getting Janet back, but it's just so much fun. And just it brings to life, like, bringing Hot Wheels cars to making Hot Wheels cars life size. And you know what? I'm always down for that. You remember when we played Forza Horizon 3 with Hot Wheels cars?
Oh yeah,
that was very exciting for me because I love Hot Wheels cars. So I couldn't leave this one off the list. I freaking love that car chase. What about your first scene, Ian?
All right, so first scene for me is another MCU title. Mm-hmm. It's a brief moment, but Winter Soldier, Captain mm-hmm. America 2, great film all around. But that one scene I always get hyped for is when Bucky steals the helicopter and Steve chases it down and he bicep curls the entire helicopter. No, Bucky, you're not getting anywhere. It's just like the single manliest moment in the world.
It is very manly. It is a very good moment. That is definitely.
I see that and I'm like, really okay, I need to get my life in order. I need to look like that. I need to be able to do that. I know that's not even remotely possible, but Kyle,
it's just so freaking cool. It's one of those superhero comic book moments that you're just amazed to even see on a screen.
It's part of what I really like about that whole movie and how the Russo brothers portrayed the lower tier superhuman abilities, mm-hmm. because it's a very simple action, you know, grabbing onto a thing and pulling it back. And the size and scope of it are clearly beyond human ability. But the way that they frame it, it makes it feel like it's just possible for Captain America. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's just maybe within the realm of credulity. And, you know, those arms are like the size of watermelons. You just roar. So, it's a fantastic moment. They don't overplay it. He looks like he's struggling. Like, it's not just a simple Superman. Ho-ho, I grabbed the thing. It's just wonderfully shot, wonderfully executed, everything. Love it, love it, love it, love it. Great movie, great moment.
It's definitely up there. And my next big movie moment, quote unquote, is the entirety of Mad Max Fury Road.
And you know what? If this was any other film, I'd go, come on, Kyle, you gotta pick. But
I know, no, I know. I literally.
No, we're in complete agreement.
I couldn't, at least. The whole movie after the chase starts, after Furiosa takes off, I can't think of, like, maybe with the dust storm scene, maybe. I don't know, though, because the initial chase is just so well done. You know, you've got the car I should say it's not a, really a car. It's more of a moving.
It's a war rig.
It's a whole moving rig of like beating of guys beating drums and the flaming guitar player guy. I can't choose. The dust storm scene is really freaking great. The canyon scene is so freaking cool. I can't decide, Ian. I can't decide, so I had to say the whole movie.
We said our favorite movie moments, and the moment that's your favorite is the chase, which just happens to be the entire film.
The entire movie, yes.
There are beats throughout it, sure, but it's all one long chase when you get down to it, really.
I know.
This is a perfectly rational point of view.
And there's and you'll notice that there is kind of a theme throughout my entire list, too, because it all involves cars, because I love cars, and I love car chases. I'm the one person who actually didn't mind the pod racing scene in Star Wars Episode 1. I mean, the movie itself, not great. The pod racing scene, though, it's really freaking cool.
First time through in the big theater, yeah, it was a major experience.
But, I mean,
on a smaller screen.
Yeah, it doesn't hold up super well. But in terms of, like, actually moving the plot forward or mattering to the story overall, it doesn't. It's a long extended scene that ultimately does not matter and could have been done in less than a few minutes instead of being a big long sequence. But it's the spectacle of the whole thing, and I feel kind of that way about Fury Road too. It's just a big long spectacle that just feels really good and is really exciting and just fun to watch. It's I don't know. It's just one of those things. I just can't pick out a specific moment where Fury Road is better than. There's one moment better than the rest of the movie. I just can't do it. I can't do it.
Nope, it's not possible.
Yeah. All right, what's next for you, Ian?
Okay, hear me out. Hear me out.
Yeah.
Shrek 1 was this complete deconstruction of the Disney fantasy movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was crude, it was cruel, but it was not inaccurate. And did a great job of lampooning an entire epoch of animation and blazing its own trail. Shrek 2 hilariously becomes a new incarnation of the very thing it took apart in the first movie.
Yeah.
But does it in its own way. And most of it is, you know, funny stuff. But what gets me is the entire castle siege segment towards the climax of the film.
Yep.
Because, I'm sorry, that's freaking awesome fantasy stuff. I mean, yeah, it's a giant gingerbread man, but you've got a giant gingerbread man trying to tear down the portcullis of the castle. And there's loss, you know? The giant gingerbread man loses its arms and falls into the moat, and it's actually kind of tragic. And the way that the voice actor for Gingy actually sounds heartbroken is like, I'm getting emotional vibes off of this. Why? What have you done to me? You know, Puss jumps off the back of the horse and says, today I repay my debt. And it's like, holy crap, this is dramatic. And he's jumping off of knights and fighting them in full armor with a little rapier. And you've got the ticking clock as not only is midnight coming, but Prince Charming is trying to get the, what you think, magically induced love potion to take over Fiona. Everything just builds. And then you've got I Need a Hero playing in the background, which it's a cheap, easy sell, but it gets me hyped every time.
I
feel a little dirty for it, but come on, man.
That song is like is beautifully
and it's
used.
A really good rendition of it too.
Yeah,
it's just it's a perfectly crafted classic style of everything just coming together. Everything has built towards this moment, and you're losing things along the way, which makes each and every step feel more exciting and more perilous, and it's just really well done. And it's especially hilarious because this is the exact thing that they were undercutting the first time through, and it just works on so many levels, Kyle. It's like a great big sandwich of meta commentary.
Yes, Shrek 2 holds a special place in my heart. It's the first movie I ever saw together with my girlfriend, so it'll always be kind of special to me.
It's a good movie.
And it's a very fun movie. I like it a lot. The sequels, the following sequels?
Didn't happen. I don't know what you're talking about. There's only the two.
Yeah, no. But the first two Shrek movies are great fun. I love them a lot. So I definitely do not have any arguments about this being on your list, Ian. All right. Well,
I can't argue with your final choice either. I mean, come on.
I had to put something from this series on my list, and I went through several ideas, but I had to go with Back to the Future and the Clock Tower finale from the first movie.
God, my heart's racing even just thinking about it.
I couldn't not do it. Back to the Future, of course, like my favorite movie series of all time. I think we've established that. It's the reason why I love the DeLorean so much. Even though it's not a great car, I'll be the first to tell you, it's not really a well-made great car, but there's just something about its screen presence and its use in Back to the Future that just makes it legendary. And its design, of course, is very cool. And it's just a cool looking car, and it was the perfect car to use for a time travel vehicle. But the Clock Tower finale, of course, it's a kind of a spoiler alert for a 30-plus-year-old movie at this point. But, you know, the Clock Tower finale, where it's the final run-up to getting 1.21 gigawatts into the flux capacitor in 1955, and the only way to do that was with a bolt of lightning. So running the DeLorean with a lightning rod sticking out of it into a electrical line attached to the roof of the Hill Valley Clock Tower, because that was the only place where they knew that lightning was going to strike, because they knew the specific day and time where lightning would strike the clock tower because of a thing earlier on in the movie where it said that the clock tower was struck by lightning and the clock hasn't worked at this specific time on this specific day for 30 years. It's just all coincidentally coming together all at once. It's so, I don't know if I want to call it contrived, Ian. It's just so convenient, but it works.
And it does. It's a well-telegraphed plot point.
Yes.
It's a clear ticking clock. Ha ha.
Exactly.
And it works within the context of the time travel set up by the movie. It's a fantastic premise.
Yeah. And then there's also the whole question of, is he actually going to be able to do it? Because there's, of course, the point where the storm causes the line to disconnect. And so freaking Doc Brown has to do a slide down a line, an electrical line, to go try and connect it back together. And he gets it just in time, just as Marty comes up in the DeLorean right at that moment, and boom. And then somehow, when Marty actually gets back, he manages to slow down from 88 miles an hour to zero without causing too much damage.
DeLoreans have great brakes, what can I say?
They don't. In the space of, like, I don't know, a few hundred feet maybe?
Doc Brown modified it for time travel. He obviously put better brakes on it.
He might have. Considering the sound of it in the movie, he probably also put a better engine in it. Because it doesn't sound like that in real life. I do know that they put better tires on it for the movie, because the tires that are on it are also not the tires that it comes with. So they definitely made some modifications. So that's possible. It's very possible, but either way, that Clock Tower finale in Back to the Future, it's intense, it's exciting, and it's just a perfect cap to a fantastic adventure movie that, you know, didn't need a sequel, but I'm glad it got some, because there's a lot of other fun moments in the other movies too, like the like Back to the Future 3, the train, using the train to push the DeLorean up to 88 miles an hour in Back to the Future Part 3. Say what you will about Back to the Future 3. I like it.
I liked it.
But, I mean, some people...
It's better than the second one.
Some people are like, eh. I like the world of the second one, but the movie itself is kind of eh.
Yeah, yeah.
But I like the future world. You know, 2015, that's so future.
So where's my floating skateboard, damn it?
Where's my flying car? Where's my flying DeLorean? That's what I want.
I can't trust people to drive on the roads as it is. I don't need them in the sky. We've said this.
I know. But still, I want a flying DeLorean.
I can't fault you for that.
All right, Ian. It's all up to you. Bring us home.
This is the scene for me. This is the one that will cue up randomly in my head and just make me.
Yeah.
Now, of the Lord of the Rings films, Fellowship of the Ring was the best of them.
I would agree.
And I would say the extended cut is the better version, especially for the other two. The other two are almost unwatchable in the theatrical version because they had to cut so much. The extended cuts actually make them better narratives. Fellowship of the Ring was strong enough on its own in the theater, but the extended cut makes it feel better, and it does a better job of telling Boromir's story. But we're not talking about Boromir, even though his death is truly epic, and Aragorn's fight with the leader of the Uruk-hai is pretty damn awesome. No, no, no. The moment, and you all know where I'm going, is where they're down in the mines of Moria, and they're surrounded by the orcs, and that just gut-rumbling roar comes down the hall. And this legion of horrible little things shriek in terror and roar. And Gandalf, the White Wizard, this is after they've beaten the cave troll, this is after after everything they've seen so far. Gandalf says, "This is beyond any of you. Run." And the shadow is mounting, and the hall is lighting up, and that male chorus is ooh, 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 in the background. And there's that scene with the stairs, which is exciting the first time through, but needs to get out of the way because we're getting to the real thing. Real thing is when that Balrog just erupts out of the floor. Kyle, this thing was exactly how I would have imagined it if you said, come up with something that is made of fire and shadow.
Oh, yeah.
It was like the production team was able to manifest my imagination on the screen. That is not a credit to me. It was just so satisfying because I have no artistic talent. I can't put on a page what I see in my head. And here it was, Kyle. It was perfect. The sound of it, the rumble of it, the way that the fire flecks away from its molten body with each step, the way that the smoke falls off its wings as it barely fits in the hallway. And it doesn't have to slather. It doesn't have to rake its claws dramatically across the wall. It just has to march forward. And you know, oh, God. No, no, no. Run, run. And they cross the bridge of Barad-dûr. And they're on the other side. And they turn. And oh, crap, Gandalf is standing there. Why is Gandalf standing there? You cannot pass. Holy crap. Why is Gandalf standing on the bridge? You cannot do that. And as my roommate informed me, because that guy had a whip. That wasn't just a normal Balrog, Kyle. That was a captain of the Balrogs. This was Apex Predator Balrog, the cream of the crop. And just, oh, the shield of light and the dark flame will not avail you. And then the staff, you know what's coming. You cannot pass, and the theater is rumbling, and nobody is breathing, and no one is blinking, and there's that crack of thunder, and we all kind of stop because what happened? And the Balrog's little nose just kind of flickers like, is it? That's all you brought to the fight, bro? Okay. Steps, and he falls. He's like, oh, Gandalf, you sly son of a gun. Right. And then the whip grabs him, and he falls, and everyone's freaking, and fly, you fools, and he's gone. That's it. He's just gone. You can't save him, because here come the orcs. You have to run, and then the sad music plays, and the hobbits are falling apart, and your heart is breaking because Gandalf just went out in the manliest fashion possible. And oh my god, Kyle! That scene is so good.
I can't argue. I can't. I really can't. It's gotta be like the most memorable scene of the entire trilogy. And the most memorable line of any Lord of the Rings media ever. And I'm 99% sure it wasn't from the books.
It's just everything leading up to that one moment was perfect. Which makes the missteps in the following movies feel so extreme, and it's not fair. It's just they caught lightning at a bottle. And they couldn't quite get back to that bar. And I don't blame them because the narrative doesn't really quite, I guess, lead there. But we're not analyzing the films. We're talking about that moment with the staff. Can't pass. Love it.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. That's like all of our we have a really freaking great list of movies here. We really do. I mean, and it's not just the scene, those specific scenes. It's all of these movies and just the way they all, especially the way they lead up to those scenes and everything. It's, I don't know. I'd watch all of these movies in a heartbeat.
Oh, absolutely.
So freaking great.
We need to do commentary on these movies. Why have we not done commentary?
We really should. We really should. I would love to do like Fury Road or Ant-Man and the Wasp especially. But man, you've gotten me excited just to go watch Fellowship of the Ring just for that moment.
You can hear the music in your head,
yes,
can't you?
Yes, I can. Yes. Oh, God, that movie, Fellowship of the Ring, is so good. The other ones are good too, but the Fellowship of the Ring is the one that just stands out the most and is the most memorable, definitely for me. So, yeah, I love it. All right.
So now that I've made myself hoarse, we're going to introduce a new feature that's all about you. What have you got for us?
About me? Oh, that's weird. Actually, I am starting a brand new segment on the Bumblecast. I don't know how frequent it's going to be. It's going to be like an infrequent segment. Maybe it'll happen sometimes. Maybe it won't. Kyle's Controller Chronicles. This segment is all about video game controllers and my quest and my adventures in finding them, acquiring them, modding them, and all sorts of other fun stuff. I have built up a giant collection of controllers, especially recently, but over the years I've gotten a lot of game consoles, so I have a lot of controllers now. And so I figured, you know, why not talk a little bit about some of them during the show? And first off, I'm going to start out with a brand new controller that just came out that I just received yesterday. And that is a new one from 8-Bit Do called the M30 Wireless Controller. Now, Ian, when you think third-party controllers, what do you normally think of?
Ew.
Yeah, I know. Well, the good news is third-party controllers have gotten a lot better. It helps that the people who are making third-party controllers now grew up with the systems and know that the third-party controllers from the time the controllers were made were crap. Time the consoles were made, I should say, were crap. And so they're doing something about it now. So 8-Bit Do is one of those companies, and I have a ton of their controllers, and they're all like really freaking high-quality stuff. So the new one, the M30 controller, is a Sega Genesis / Mega Drive style controller. It has some stuff in common with the Sega Saturn controller a little bit. It also kind of has that style to it. It adds L and R buttons. It's a wireless controller, has USB-C charging. I haven't tested the battery life, but 8-Bit Do's controllers usually last for quite a while, so I haven't had one die on me yet. The buttons are freaking excellent and they feel good. The controller feels good. It's a little bit of a different shape than the original Genesis controller, but it has a good build quality and good weight to it. It doesn't creak or anything. You can sit here and like twist it and it doesn't make any noise. So I recommend the 8-Bit Do M30 wireless controller for like Sega Genesis games. If you're playing Sega Genesis, there's also a wireless adapter for it that lets you use the wireless 2.4 gigahertz or Bluetooth versions with your original hardware, so that's cool. And I'm trying to think of what else. Oh, it works with mobile phones, computers. I've been using it on my PC to play a couple games here and there, and it works great on it. And all of 8-Bit Do's controllers work well with the Nintendo Switch. So if you're looking for a Switch controller alternative to the ridiculously overpriced Pro Controller, there you go. There's an option for you. So I suggest checking it out. It even has like Switch-specific buttons. It has the screenshot and share buttons. So it's all good.
Just to point out, this is not sponsored by anyone in any way, but 8-Bit Do, if you hear this, talk to us. We can like you a lot.
I really do quite like 8-Bit Does controllers. Another company also doing Genesis-style controllers right now is Retrobit. They are putting out Genesis and Saturn controllers that are compatible with the original consoles and with USB. I haven't played with those yet. I think they literally just came out also. So if you're in the market for Genesis controllers, there's like tons of them now. The Retrobit ones are officially licensed by Sega, and they're in collaboration with Sega, so they look just like the originals. So I'm interested in picking those up. So, and also, finally, to close this out, one of my recommended features, recommended ideas, if you're interested in modifying your Dreamcast controller, I recently found out that the Dreamcast controller thumbsticks are directly replaceable by PlayStation 4 thumbsticks.
Really?
Yeah. So if your Dreamcast controller thumbstick is a bit worn out, or you just are kind of tired of the feel of it, it is a little weird and rough.
It was not the most comfortable.
It's not the most comfortable. Yeah, definitely, especially in the thumbstick, not the most comfortable thumbstick. If you get PlayStation 4 replacement thumbsticks, they'll pop right on your Dreamcast controller, and they work great. I was playing some Daytona the other day, actually, with a replaced thumbstick, and feels really good. So if you're looking for a replacement for that, there you go. So check that out. That's my latest adventures in controller goodness. Let's go ahead and move on.
Very cool.
We're on to the Q&A. It's Q&A time here on the Bumblecast. Don't forget, you can send us your Q&A questions via email at bumblecast@yahoo.com. via Twitter, @Bumblecast, down in the YouTube comments below, or via Patreon comments or messages. We'll see it there. We'll get to it. If you have not had your question answered and you asked it a while ago, let me know, and I'll see what I can do. But first, we've got to get to our Patreon questions, a Patreon priority Q&A. Hope you guys are enjoying the recording as we're doing this right now, by the way, patrons. I can't see you because I have the chat closed right now, so I don't get distracted, but hope you guys like it. Anyway, first up, we've got one from Mike B. Going off of Saturn Flicky's question from Bumblecast number 83, what gameplay elements can you see not being plausible or feasible enough to be contextualized / used in the comics?
Oh, I guess most of the upgrades primarily, like the magic gloves out of SA2, that just, they're not really memorable, and you'd have to jump through such hoops to explain why they exist and how they work that it doesn't really serve a purpose. Like stuff like the bounce bracelet, the fire ring, stuff that, you know, you don't really see show up again on any of the characters afterwards, or kind of gets incorporated into their moveset to some degree or another.
Right.
Some of the boss moves, like Black Wave is a neat move from Rouge. How does she do it? What is it made of? How does she execute it? Yeah, it never really came up again after SA2. So there's little tiny things here and there that I would kind of get into, but and like the item boxes, they're a neat idea, and I would like to try to contextualize them within the world of the comics, but short of having them be storage devices like we've already seen, yeah. I can't really use them as here is the upgrade, because what is it, or the bonus item, how does it really work in a universe where we're treating it as, you know, everyday stuff, like the giant boost rings hanging in.
I'm sure
I'll think of something else, but
The item boxes are a cute reference in the comics, but there's really no reason to otherwise have them around.
Right. So,
they just don't fit.
Yeah, it's just stuff general like that. Stuff that isn't really intrinsic to the character, the greater world, the kind of temporary stuff.
Right. All right, this next question comes from our good buddy, Scruffy Matt. It was recently announced that an animated Batman / TMNT crossover movie is coming out later in the year. What two franchises would you most like to see get a similar crossover treatment?
Oh, geez.
They really can't decide what they want to do with Batman, can they? I'm just putting that out. It's like,
at this point, Batman has had so many different incarnations, he can kind of fit with a lot of things. You just got to pick your era, pick your flavor.
Right.
Your bat flavor, if you will.
Right. We have so many freaking variations on Batman, it's getting kind of ridiculous.
Gosh, this is a broad question.
Well, I mean, Sonic and Mega Man, we've had the comic. If we were going to do an animated movie, we could do that. I mean, that's the obvious answer, though.
You know what? I'm going to go a little off the rails here and say James Bond and Metal Gear Solid.
You know, it would probably work. I mean, you've already got the theme song.
I mean, you've got, you know, the kind of political intrigue. You've got the exotic locales. And you can play the suave, debonair, unflappable Bond against Snake.
Yeah, you've got the espionage. So they're both espionage professionals. They just have different methods. So
I'll take a martini, shaken, not stirred. How does it taste? Dry.
I'm down.
My name's Snake. Solid Snake.
I'm down. I'm pretty.
You got
down.
The gun barrel moving across the opening scene, but instead of Bond walking, it's Snake crawling. And it settles on him, and instead of the turn with the gun, it's that exclamation point. Whoop!
Man, I can't think of any. I can't think of anything that I'd want to see a crossover like that. Man, that's tough. I like your answer. Your answer is really good. I'd love to see that. Crap. Jeez, I don't know. I would love to kind of see. I don't know. It would be cool if Marvel and DC could play nice together.
Yeah.
But that's again, pretty obvious.
Nah, this is kind of not to the spirit of the question, but I guess it's kind of the ballpark. A thematic crossover I would like to see would be a Metroid game done in the level of technology of Legend of Zelda. We can even cheat a little bit and say Breath of the Wild, but see Samus in some kind of magical suit of armor that isn't so sci-fi and a little more medieval. And on the flip side, a cyberpunky sci-fi Legend of Zelda styled game.
That would be cool. I could actually see like a Metroid slash Zelda kind of weird crossover thing, maybe. I don't know. You could do in both directions. Have Samus show up in a fantasy styled universe, and then Link shows up in the future cyberpunk Metroid universe. I don't know. That could be like a really. I would definitely like to see Nintendo kind of mingle its properties a little bit more outside of Mario Kart and Smash Brothers. That could be interesting. All right, and now let's jump over into the standard Q&A. First one comes from Brody M. If Marvel wanted you to write a comic book for them, which character would you choose? To say it, this is assuming you have the luxury of being able to choose a character, which you usually don't when it comes to comics, but...
In the magical realm where Marvel says, hey, you're a pretty good kid, why don't you pitch something to us? I don't know if it would work anymore because I'm lapsed on my Marvel comic universe right now, but I had an idea for a Prowler pitch that I liked.
Mm-hmm.
And while the landscape has changed considerably, I kind of want to take a shot at X-Men. It's not where I was when I was reading it. I don't know where I necessarily would take it, but darn it, I like the Mighty Muties. I want to do something.
Yeah, I don't know where X-Men is in status at all, except that Wolverine's back.
Yeah, and Cyclops is back. Nobody stays dead.
Well, no, obviously not. No. I don't know. They should have kept Laura as Wolverine, but whatever. I don't know. I'm not a comic person. Except I read them all the time. Well, not all the time, but frequently. And I like comics. And I watch comic book movies and TV shows. Okay, I'm a comic person. Anyway, next question comes from Anonymous. Good old Anonymous. Is it true that Sonic Can't Cry was an official restriction on Sonic comics?
Okay. Let's take this to the beginning, because this comes up all the time, and everyone online has their own interpretation of
it. I'm pretty sure we have already gone over this several times, but
it bears repeating.
It does. It does.
The original realization of the Sonic Can't Cry mandate came from Ken Penders back towards the end of the Carl Bowlers / Ken Penders run, before I was really on the book. Came from his message board as apparently a reaction to cover of Sonic 155. The Sally Mary's Patch storyline, where it's Sonic moping in the corner with a wedding invite in his hand. And I don't remember the exact phrasing. I just remember that's where it came from. And the fandom lost its collective mind because how dare Sega step in the way and stop Sonic from any kind of emotional growth and da-da-da-da. And when I got on the book, the understanding was Sonic can't be anything but upbeat. And as time went on, the understanding became we can't have him moping and crying in a corner because that's not the character. That's not how he would react. And since then, if you, read the old Archie run, if you've been the IDW run, you know that, Sonic is allowed to emote. He's allowed to show something beyond smug optimism. It's just he can't be all weepy and defeatist about anything, which is fine because, one, who wants to read that? And two, that's not the nature of the character.
Right.
Now, if Anonymous is asking if Sega sent in a hard-pressed envelope that was inscribed with "Thou shalt not make Sonic weep," no. As far as I know, there was no official memorandum with the Sega letterhead mailed in. It's just, when I'm assuming this was the same during the previous writers' runs, but during my tenure, it's been you submit stuff and it gets a yay or an A. Or notes back saying, don't do that. Okay. That's just the nature of a licensed book.
All right. Next question comes from Homura the Best. Do the Chaos Emeralds work like Infinity Stones, where they only work in their universe of origin, or can they be used in any universe?
Well, that's a sticky wicket. I'm going to go out on a limb and say they work in any universe because while we don't know their exact origin, we have seen them work in Sonic's universe, the human universe, and Blaze's universe. So, assuming that those are separate dimensions, as I believe that is the canon line for now, we have examples of it working outside of Sonic's universe, so even if that were not the home universe, it still shows it can work in other ones.
Yeah.
They can work in other ones. Let's get our tenses right.
Sure. We know that the Soul Emeralds can work in multiple universes too, so.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's been established. All right. Next one comes from Squingy. Hey, Ian, I got a weird question. Do you have a weird answer? We'll find out.
That depends on how weird the question is. Come at me, Squingy.
I noticed that when Blaze shows up in Volume 3, I think, of the new Sonic comic, Tangle is really flustered and blushes. Does she have a crush on Blaze or something? Or is she just, really enthusiastic about cat girls?
I'm not sure where you're getting flustered and blushing from, but let me put it this way. If you're in the middle of defending your hometown from killer robots, and somebody just appears from the sky in a pillar of fire, and the world-renowned hero that you just happen to be working with is like, oh, hey, what up? You're going to be a little dazzled. I mean, come on. Tangle was a vehicle to introduce some outlandish concepts very early on in the series. When we were launching IDW Sonic, one of the things I really had to work on was remembering that not everyone reads Sonic. Not everyone followed the Archie book. And going by the numbers, we got a lot of new people reading that book. A lot of the casual fans or just folks in general know Sonic is a fast hedgehog. They know Eggman, or still only know Robotnik, uses robots. They maybe know about Tails, but that's about it. And it's kind of frightening to even acknowledge that there was a time where I was like that. In the long, long ago, before I knew everything. So, you know, selling the idea of talking animals fighting robots is already kind of a hard push for some readers. Interdimensional princesses with pyrokinetic powers takes it a whole other step. So Tangle was our vehicle of introducing the idea of Sonic is a world-renowned hero, that there are kind of pedestrian-level animals in that world, and the entire deal with Blaze. And because Tangle is such a fun character, we can continue to use her as that vehicle to explore all the weird and wacky sides of the Sonic universe. And she's just excited about every one of them. She's just bursting with energy. God, she makes me tired just thinking about it.
And who doesn't? But, I mean, I was going to say, Ian, who doesn't have a crush on Blaze, though? Like, seriously, who doesn't?
So, to get more to the point of the question, it was not a specific reaction to Blaze so much as what Blaze can do and the circumstances. And you can see Tangle reacting similarly throughout the series.
Oh, yeah. She reacts to everything like that. Which is great. That's one of the great things about her character.
Oh, she's fun.
She is very fun. And speaking of Tangle and Blaze, here's another one from Jack. Will you explore the interactions between Tangle and Blaze outside of Tangle's admiration for Blaze? I'm interested because they're like polar opposites. Tangle's extroverted and Blaze is more introverted and royal. It would be cool.
Yeah, it would be. And Jack, I'm going to use your question as an example of how to toe that line asking about future stuff in the book. Because if Jack had worded that slightly differently, it would have sounded more like a plot pitch, and I can't look at those kinds of questions. But he worded it just right to put out the, you know, general question idea that I can approach without worrying. So kudos to you, Jack.
Good job, Jack.
We're not going to be seeing a lot of Tangle and Blaze in the immediate future. Blaze went back to her dimension at the end of season one, but we will be seeing a lot of Tangle and Whisper, and Whisper is even more withdrawn than Blaze. So you'll be getting a kind of similar vibe. It's not the same because Whisper is a completely different character than Blaze, but in the whole terms of vivacious versus taciturn, you'll be getting that mix at least.
Yeah.
Because they're getting a whole miniseries this summer. Woo!
Yeah, that's awesome. I am very, very pleased. So I'm looking forward to that. I hope you are also looking forward to that. And yeah, because we're at the end of the Bumblecast, so we don't really have anything else to look forward to except the next Bumblecast. And
well, if they're impatient, Kyle, where can they find you after the show?
You can find me over on Twitter at KyleJCRB. You can also find me on KNGI.org, where you can find archives of the Bumblecast, MP3 download versions, and also archives of my other show, Nitro Game Injection, which you can also tune into live on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can find out all the information and join the KNGI Discord over at KNGI.org. All the information is there. If you go to KNGI.org/listen, you can tune in. And there's always something playing on the KNGI live stream too. So if you're, even if there's like not a show going on, if I'm not streaming or if nobody else is streaming or anything on there, you can tune in and listen to some awesome remixed video game music that's happening 24/7. So be sure to go check that out. Where can people find you, Ian?
You can find me on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC or my website, bumbleking.com, that has my con schedule, which to remind you, Toronto Comic Con is coming up middle of March. All the details are on the website. You can also see the release schedule of books I'm working on over on the Bumble calendar, news updates, my body of work, the whole shebang.
Is your body ready for the work? Your body should be ready.
Certainly hope so. It could be in better shape, I guess.
Okay. Don't forget, you can also follow the show at Bumblecast, where you can also ask your Q&A questions and send us email at bumblecast@yahoo.com.
Patrons get exclusive live streams of games from us Sundays at 10-ish p.m. Eastern Standard Time in the evenings.
We announce it. We'll let you know. And the you can also check out the Bumble store at shop.spreadshirt.com/bumblestore. You can get some Bumble items to put around your Bumble house. You have a Bumble house, right?
I would certainly hope so. If not, you can make it one thanks to that store.
Exactly.
And while you're sitting around your Bumble house watching your Bumble TV, you can watch us Bumble stream over at twitch.tv/BumbleCastGaming.
Indeed. Several times a week, at least, I try to. It's been a kind of a slow week for me over there, but I'll try to get back into it soon. And don't forget, Ian, we got to give a shout-out to our lovely patrons.
I'm just about to do so.
Excellent.
Big thank you to Daniel H, Eric F, Connell T, Alex P, Alex B, Mike B, Saturn Flicky, Xanos, Duas, Diz, Din, Scruffy Matt, Alex A, John B, Jennifer R, David C, Rem the Light, Lisa M, Samuel P, Sam Cybercat, Digama F, Wow, Dragon Superfan, AE Double, Brody M, Neil H, Justin G, Dan M S, Adam T, Sally String, Decaro, Lee H K, Chevelle, Don B, Sen Fritz, Taco El Gato Comics, John M, James K, Papadripodopoulos, Overthink Films, Adam BT, and Ron.
Ah, yes. Good old Ron. And everybody else. Good old everybody else. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you so much for joining us for episode 86 of the Bumblecast. We will see you in 2 weeks, and we'll talk about something else on Ron.
See you next time.
Okay, AE Double, Street Fighter meets Scooby-Doo. Screw you, man. That's brilliant.
Oh, yeah. That's really good.
Like, zoink, Scoob, I just throw a Hadouken. No. We're not done yet. Scooby gets the psycho power and just turns into a full M. Bison looking thing. Row! Behold my rower!
I can't do a good Scooby-Doo.
Rico Rush! As he just spins around across the screen.
I can't do a good Scooby-Doo, or I'd make a joke about Tuesday.
Rackway! Granger Rife! Really? It was only a Tuesday.
No, it was Tuesday. Not only a Tuesday, but good enough.
Really? I thought it was only a Tuesday. Oh.
No, it is. And for me, it was Tuesday. That's what he says. One of the greatest lines in movie history. And I'm not joking.
It's a good line.
It really is. It helps that it's Raul Julia, who I freaking...
Well, yeah, sure.
I freaking love Raul Julia. I miss him so much. He's so great. 86 episodes, we haven't had an on-mic fart yet, so we're doing pretty good.
I didn't know that was a benchmark we were aiming for.
Well, up to you and to me. I don't know. Depends on if our microphones can pick it up or not.
Yes, Scruffy. Episode 100 will be just one extended flatulence.
You mean like every other episode?
Hey! See, this is why the haters can never get us down, because we do it ourselves.
You've been listening to The Bumblecast, a co-production of Bumble King Comics and the KNGI Network. Original theme music composed by Ken Coda Snyder. Remixed intro by T-Lopes. Find out more information, along with podcast feeder links, MP3 downloads, and more at bumbleking.com and kngi.org. Sin, wake up. Sin, be alive. And then we can start this thing. Sin, live. We're desperate for people to listen to us.
He's right, though.
Give us attention.